Today's episode of Rob as a Podcast is sponsored by our friends over at True Car. Now, we all turn to the internet to resolve every single one of life's mysteries, from who's going to win the presidential campaigns to what happened to the mozzarella cheese in my fast food cheese sticks. But the internet is also the best place to go when you want to try to find the best price on a brand new car. And True Car and the True Car mobile app are exactly the solution that you're looking for online, because with True Car, you could pick out all the features that you want in your brand new car, and you can also see exactly what other people are paying for that same exact car down to the zip code. Because what makes True Car truly special is the True Car Certified Dealer Network, because True Car has partnered with over 10,000 True Car Certified Dealers, and they all believe that it's the best way to buy a new car. Because with True Car, you get guaranteed savings over $3,000 off of MSRP on average, and True Car Certified Dealers will honor that savings once you find the price online. There's no hassles or headaches that you'd associate with buying a new car. It's how car buying was always meant to be. Over 2 million cars have been sold by that True Car Certified Dealer Network, and you could be next. Visit TrueCar.com and download the True Car app to start saving. True Car, never overpay. Hey everybody, what's going on? Rob Cesternino here with a fun podcast. We're going to be talking to two very smart women in the world of reality TV on this podcast. We're going to first speak with a woman, a very prestigious guest here on the podcast, that she is the woman who created the TV show Jersey Shore and has gone on to be an outstanding showrunner and executive producer in the world of reality TV. We're going to speak with Sally Ann Salsano, who has many different reality TV shows currently on the air with her production company, 495 Productions. She has a couple of shows on the air right now, including The X Isle, which is on WeTV, which is hosted by Carmen Electra. She also has a new show coming out on Lifetime, which is called The Mother-Daughter Experiment. We're going to talk about that and everything else that Sally Ann is working on. And then we're going to be speaking with one of the Mount Rushmore guests of Rob Has a Podcast, that one of my favorite people to talk to. We didn't get to talk to her for a Survivor recap last season, but we did get to talk to her about her thoughts on Serial a couple of weeks ago. And as we talked about then, maybe she was going to come back and check in. So we're going to talk with Sophie G. Clark. She's going to come back to talk about what she's thinking about the current season of Serial and Making a Murderer, and what she did this weekend at the Survivor Big Brother meetup. And we're going to also talk about our big Survivor Family Feud game, which is coming up this weekend. Wine and Cheese versus Dirty 30. So Sophie Clark is going to be here as well today to talk about it all here on the podcast. Of course, we had our big Survivor season preview earlier this week. Also working on our interview with Spencer Bledsoe, which is going to be coming up very soon here on the podcast. So a lot of fun stuff here on the podcast. Make sure you subscribe. robhasawebsite.com/iTunes, or search for Rob as a Podcast in your favorite podcatcher. Or you could also get the Rob as a Podcast app at robhasawebsite.com/app for Android and iOS. All right, everybody, I'm very excited to bring in our guest today. As I mentioned at the top of the show, Sally Ann Salsano was the creator of The Jersey Shore, which went on to have incredible success. We were such big fans of that show. She's gone on to produce a number of other hit reality shows, including The Blue Collar Millionaires, Party Down South. She's also producing The X Isle with Carmen Electra and is about to launch The Mother-Daughter Experiment on Lifetime coming up on March 1st. She's also a native of Long Island, much like myself. Let's welcome in Sally Ann Salsano. Sally, how are you?
I am actually doing really well, and I love that you're from Long Island.
Yeah, I'm from Wantagh. I know you're from Farmingdale.
I am. Same train stops, same train line to the city on the Massapequa line. And it's funny, everyone out here in LA refers to it as that island I come from.
Yeah. Well, your production company is 495 Productions, and of course, named after the LIE, which so many of us from Long Island have sat on for very long periods of time.
That's exactly where it came from. My dad used to drive me to my internship.
Yes.
And I would be stuck on that damn 495 forever.
Now, Sally, I know you have so many different shows that you're always currently working on. One of the shows that you're working on right now, X-Isle with Carmen Electra, is very interesting to me. Now, you were taking these people to an island and you were trying to get these couples back together?
Opposite. We are not.
Okay.
This is a show where it's like, look, you broke up for a reason. Stop hanging on. Lose the dead weight. It is not a good idea. We are all two drinks and one booty call away from getting back to our ex.
Yes.
And this show basically proves that add alcohol and everything just goes to crap.
How do you find the couples that are in these relationships? Are you saying that they're very easy to find?
I would say that it's very easy to find because if you even think about your own life and anyone you know, we've all been in a relationship where you break up, but then sometimes you hang on, you keep someone around until you find someone else. They're like what I like to always call your backup plan.
Mm-hmm.
Like we all do it. So it is one of those things that when you know, the ad basically, you know, when we were looking for people, it's like, are you in a relationship with your ex? You know, I mean, did you break up with your ex, but you're still friends, but you're ready to move on? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, if you're still friends with your ex, you're probably not ready to move on.
Now, do you find that there's one partner in these relationships that wants to hang in there more than the other one, or they're both just sort of like, well, let me see if there's anything better coming along, and okay, let me just call somebody late at night and get back together that way?
I always feel like there's one person who wants in more, but also the thing is too, sometimes it goes that way. I know for me, like with your ex, right? Like you break up with your ex and you think that they're always going to be there, right? And then you see your ex hook up with someone else and then all of a sudden, oddly, they look good to you again.
Yeah, you want them back. Somebody else wants them. There must be something there.
Completely. And that's kind of, you know, what the issue is.
So how are they going about trying to show people that you guys do not work together?
Well, there's a therapist on the island with them, but also I think just seeing people in the same situation of you is oddly helpful. Because, you know, you always sit there and you complain to your friends and your friends are like, of course, you're right, you're pretty, blah, blah, blah. But in reality, that's not the truth. Like, you know, other people are there. And then this week we move in 10 hot singles with them, which they don't know are moving in with them. And to say that it causes a little bit of tension would basically be the understatement of the century. It is a total shitstorm.
So the goal here is that unlike all these other shows, you are trying to walk away with everybody broken up by the end of this thing.
Yes. Like see the light, dude. And if there is someone that loves someone, you know, more in the relationship, it's either come to the other side now or realize once and for all that they're over you because they're literally hooking up with someone in front of your face.
Now, do you think that it could potentially be that one of the couples will say like, no, I realize that we need to be together?
I was there.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that potential is there and it's actually very fun to watch.
I want to hear about the mother-daughter experiment because, in following reality TV, there's a couple people that are involved with this that are people that we followed on other shows. You know, we podcast about the marriage boot camp earlier last year. So we certainly know about Heidi and Natalie Nunn that we saw them on that show. But I think that this is an interesting concept to have mothers and daughters together in this reality TV setting. How did you come up with the idea for a show based on that?
I got to tell you, truth be told, there's no more complicated relationship than a mother-daughter relationship. Even in the best case scenario, when everyone loves each other and it's kumbaya, it's completely twisted.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, you know, and then you add fame to it and put everything all over the internet and you have a recipe for, you know, a lot of misunderstandings and layers.
Yeah.
And especially like when one of them is famous and one is not, someone always feels used. Someone feels left out. Like it literally goes in a circle.
Because I think you could do this show with not even reality TV famous mothers and daughters, and I think that you would get a lot of drama.
I completely agree. I definitely feel like you do not need to be famous. Like, my mom was my best friend. That being said, our relationship was complicated and we could have been on the show.
So then at the end of the mother-daughter experiment, is the goal for each of these mothers and daughter pairs to reconcile their relationships completely?
Yes, the goal is to completely reconcile, get it out once and for all in a controlled environment with your peers, you know, kind of working through it. And I have to tell you, the thing that I love about this show, to your point, is like, you've seen Heidi Montag, you've seen Natalie Nunn, you've seen Courtney Sodden, you've seen Kim Richards. We've seen all these people before. I can say 100% you've never seen them like this. Because there's something completely different that when you put their unfamous family members in with them, then you're like, okay, they can't keep up whatever ruse that they had. Because their family member calls them out like, dude, you need to be real. This is what it is.
What do you think is more problematic for the relationship? Do you think it's harder for the famous mom and the unfamous daughter, or the famous daughter and the unfamous mom? Because I think there's a little bit of a chicken and egg in each of those things, because I think that there's something about the mom that drives the daughter to go into like this reality TV boiling pot of, you know, all the insanity that comes with it. And then also, I think that when it's the mom that's the famous person from reality TV, I think that has to have a huge effect on the daughter.
I think either way, it's difficult because someone feels left out and then the other person feels like you don't respect what I'm doing. I literally think it's a total double-edged sword. And I also think when it's the kid that's the famous one, when it's the mom that's a famous one, sometimes the kid doesn't want to be famous and is like, Jesus, leave me out of this.
Mm-hmm.
And when it's, you know, the kid that's the famous one, you know, certain kind of fame, notoriety and money makes you somehow feel like you no longer have to be respectful to your mother.
Mm-hmm.
And it gives you the right to grow up faster. So I think it's actually hard on everybody.
Yeah.
I think every combination of it is difficult.
I really feel like that there has to be something that's, as a parent, I feel like when your kid like seeks out this reality TV fame, I do feel like that they felt, I don't know if necessarily if unloved is just oversimplifying it, but I feel like that there's something lacking there that they're going out and seeking in this reality TV world. And I feel like that as a parent, that there has to be like, you feel like that maybe that you didn't provide something, or that the kid feels like they didn't get something from the parent.
I don't know. Sometimes it's just people like, it's like a version of, if you have a kid that wants to be a child actor and wants to be famous, why is that any different from a kid that tries out to be an Annie? It's kind of not.
Yeah.
You know, it's really not. And I got to tell you, doing a lot of these shows, I love a lot of these kids and I know their families and they come from great homes. It's not that at all. And a lot of these kids are very close with their parents and discuss it with them before doing it.
Yeah.
You know, I think like, you know, it's not the same realm. And now I think if you have a 19-year-old that, you know, is starring in, you know, Naughty Neighbors number 5, I feel like that's potentially a little bit of a different situation. But I think like being on a reality show doesn't mean that you didn't get something at home.
How did you do the casting for the mother and daughter experiment? Because I think that it's probably a tall order to find these celebrities that either want to come on and bring their real life mom or daughter into something like this.
I got to tell you, it wasn't as hard as you would have thought. I wouldn't say it was easy, but I also would say that like, I think that if the mother and daughter love and respect each other or are at such odds and they've tried everything else, why not try this? And all of these people's lives are out there anyway. What is the difference?
Do you think that this would work with fathers and sons as well as it would work with moms and daughters?
Yeah, just fathers and sons. I always visualize them grunting at each other.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, yes, I think in some situations it would. I think now that would be a harder casting. Because I think, you know, us chicks, if you will, have no problem, you know, talking about our emotions. As a matter of fact, we have a harder time not talking about our emotions.
Now, Sally Ann, I know you've been on so many different sets for all these different reality shows that you've produced. Can you just talk about how different the dynamic is to have a show where it's all women without any men on the set?
No, not. I mean, listen, having any bunch of girls on a set is tough. If you throw in a couple of guys, the girls, you know, mood swings kind of tend to reign supreme regardless. I don't know. We have a lot of women that work here, and I would say I'm not exactly the most even keeled.
Yeah.
So let's just say when I'm on a set with all women that are slightly off, I like to say I'm very at home and I walk amongst my people.
Sure, you could feel right at home with the mother-daughter experiment that's going to be coming to Lifetime on March 1st. Sally Ann, I'm really intrigued to know the differences that you found in working on a show like Party Down South coming off of the Jersey Shore. Have you found that it's really like all young people are the same, or is working with that kind of cast a lot different than working with the Jersey Shore?
You know what? I have to tell you, it's like the formula is a little bit the same, but the cast is completely and utterly different. And I would say like values are definitely the same, but I can't explain it. Like what everyone thought was so weird about Jersey Shore, they were like, who are these kids? They're like grownups. They're living with their parents. Like what's going on? And to me, that felt totally normal because I was like 24 living at home. My mom was making my lunch and doing my laundry. So I didn't think that the cast of Jersey Shore was weird. Mm-hmm. I thought it was totally normal. And then with these kids, it's just different. Like Southern hospitality, Southern manners, like they all grow up, they move on a lot quicker, and they live adult lives very young.
You've done so many different types of shows. Like, how do you know if an idea for a reality TV show, if you have something, is going to be viable as a show or not, or something that's just not going to work?
I think you don't know. I think you have to trust your gut, and it almost doesn't matter what you think. You're at the mercy of the networks. You have to hope that they think what you think.
Yeah.
You know, so there's plenty of things that I'm like, oh my God, just let me do this. I promise you it's going to work.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't do it. Like Party Down South was a show that like we're pitching for two, three years.
Yeah.
And no one would do it. No one would do it. And it was like in the height of Jersey. And we're like, this should be like our version of Housewives. You know, we should have every different city. So we're replicating all different bunches of people, but people don't always see it that way. So if you believe in something, you have to stay strong with it. But it takes a lot of bandwidth to like keep the cast amped, keep them motivated, as it could take you 2, 3, 4, 5, as many years as you have to sell it.
Now, Sally Ann, on this show, we mostly talk about the competition reality shows, specifically strategic competition reality shows like Survivor, Big Brother, Amazing Race, Apprentice. But most of your success in your career has come from the non-competition type shows. Have you ever had any desire to get into doing a competition show as one of the next shows that you're working on?
I love a formatted show. That's actually where I started. When I sold Jersey Shore, they wanted me to not produce it because I had never done a docuseries before.
Mm-hmm.
I came from the world of formatted TV.
Yeah.
So I also did like Design Star, Bachelor, Tila Tequila. Like I did a ton of shows like that. So, I mean, those shows, at least you know what three to four acts of your show are before you even get out in the field.
Yeah.
You know, you're like, okay, the last act, you're announcing who's going home, they're going to cry. The act before, everyone's voting. The act before, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, yes, you still need it to be good and you still need to cast it well and have good characters, but you actually have some stuff built in that helps drive content. When you're doing, you know, a docuseries, it's actually a little scarier because you're kind of like, all right, we're going. Everyone's coming and no one's going home. This better work. You know, you have nothing built in to help you along.
Would you ever consider going back into that, doing another competition show?
Oh, for sure. For sure.
Now, one of the other shows you do is Blue Collar Millionaires on CNBC, which I think is an amazing idea for a show. Could you tell people what that show is about if they haven't checked that out yet?
Yeah, and I kind of love it. I always say if Dirty Jobs and the Lifestyles of Rich and Famous f***ed and had a baby, it would be this show.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of like, you know, everyone is always like, oh, I'm this actress or I'm an heiress to the oil fields. It's like, no, you could actually shovel crap for a living. You can be a construction worker. You can be a landscaper and you can make it.
Yeah.
A little bit of hard work and a little bit of elbow grease. And also like just putting in the time and you can make it happen for yourself. And I feel like it's a message that sometimes gets lost. Like, sure, college is great. Okay. But I went to school for accounting. How the hell's that help me? You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not like there's not like reality TV college. You graduate and they hand you Survivor. That's not how it happens.
Right. What's been the biggest difference that you've seen between a blue collar millionaire and a white collar millionaire?
The way they treat the people that work for them.
Interesting.
Because I definitely think it's like they know the job.
Yeah.
Meaning that like they did it. Like, you know, it's like even here at my company, like I need every single person that works for me for sure. Like mm-hmm. every person has a thing, you know, has a role, and I could not do it without them. That being said, I understand everyone's job and could do it.
Do you feel like blue collar, does that have to do more with either the region that people live in, or is it just like that they keep their cost of living the lowest, or that they are working sort of like with their hands to sort of make the living that they've made?
It's with their hands. It's the type of job that they have. It's not where they live. It's not anything. It's just the type of physical, you know, the type of job that they have.
Okay.
You know, they're not an accountant. They're not a whatever. They're in the mix.
Sally, and let me just ask you one last question revolving around Jersey Shore news that we saw that Snooki was added to the cast of Celebrity Apprentice, the new Arnold Schwarzenegger version. How do you think that she'll do? Do you think she has a good shot to win?
I think Snooki's smarter than people think, but I think she's going to have fun.
All right. Sally Ann Salsano from 495 Productions. You can check it all out at 495productions.com. Sally Ann, is there anything else?
No, that's it. I mean, well, you know, Exile on Friday night is good and crazy. And if you've missed it, go and catch up on demand. Party Down South is literally about to get so insane. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mother-daughter experiment, all I can say is I got there day one and I left 14 days later. I feel like we never left the set because it was so freaking good.
Okay.
Like, it was like, I could not believe what was going on.
Sally Ann, thank you so much for coming on with us, that you are representing Long Island well over at 495 Productions with all of these shows that you've made. So keep up the good work, and great talking to you. All the best. Okay.
No worries. Have a good day.
All right. Take care, Sally Ann.
Bye.
All right, everybody. There you have it. That's Sally Ann Salsano, creator of The Jersey Shore and a bunch of other reality TV shows. And she made it out of Long Island to become a very successful reality TV producer. All right. So before we jump into talking to Sophie, let me just take a moment and talk about another show here on Podcast One, which is the Schmoes Know. Because look, if you're not listening to this show on the Podcast One app, you can check it out and very quickly switch from one Podcast One show to another. There's over 200 shows on the app. You can create your own custom playlist. And if you are a fan of movies in addition to reality TV, check out Schmoes Know, where regular schmoes talk to you and host weekly discussions about the not so regular schmoes like Quentin Tarantino. So join the conversation, download the app from the App Store, Google Play, or at podcastone.com. Check it out for yourself. Schmoes Know, plus all the other podcasts on Podcast One. All right, I'm very excited to bring this person back into the podcast because I spoke to her a couple of weeks ago, back in December when Serial first came out. We talked about the first episode of Serial. We said we were going to check in down the road. Very happy to do that. Of course, we have a million things to talk with her about, including this Friday, she is going to be one of the people on Team Wine and Cheese in the big Survivor Family Feud, Wine and Cheese versus Dirty 30. Please welcome the winner of Survivor South Pacific, Sophie Clark.
Woohoo!
Welcome back, Sophie.
Thank you. I'm a little worried that you just said we're talking about Serial. I kind of forgot that that was like the point of this phone call.
We don't have to talk a lot about Serial. We could talk about like where we expected it to go. I mean,
there's not much to say, is there?
Yeah, we left that first podcast we had done about Serial back in December on like sort of like an optimistic note. And I sort of just binged listened to most, like I actually sort of like drifted off a number of times with it, and I binge listened to all of it just to get ready to talk to you today. But we don't have to spend a lot of time on it.
I should have saved you from it. I mean, God, it is a disaster. Yeah. I feel like we were really kind to her.
I needed to be rescued more than Bo Bergdahl.
Oh my God, me too. And I also, do you notice, you know how she's now switched it to being every other week instead of every week?
Yes, yes.
Do you think she's hoping we're just going to forget about it?
Yes. They're in over their head. Well, it's
now, God, it's so bad.
Yeah, if you don't know what we're talking about, of course, the podcast Serial came back in season two and it was such a hit in season one. But in season two, they switched to a different story. Sophie had theorized in the first episode of the new season that maybe they got a little too big for their britches. And I'm starting to think that you're right about that. I think that they felt like, you know, we don't have to talk about a murder case here. So we're going to do this story. And I can't even follow the thread of what they're talking about in Serial season two. Like, I thought we were going to talk about like, oh, Bo Bergdahl, is he telling the truth or is he not? And I feel like she just sort of like declared, like on the second or third episode, nah, I'm pretty sure he's telling the truth about this. And now we're talking about like, why didn't they rescue him faster?
Rob, I couldn't even tell you what they're talking about. I feel like this is like, it's as if it's so boring. It's as if like, you know, PBS did a podcast recapping Antiques Roadshow every 2 weeks or something. It's so, I basically have three categories of podcasts. I have podcasts that I like sit down and listen to. Like I don't do anything else. I like, you know, sit in a chair and I just like soak it all in. Mm-hmm. And then I have the podcast that I like will take a walk to, or, you know, if I'm in the subway. And then I have the ones that I like put on either on the airplane or when I'm in bed. And like the pure purpose of them is to put me to sleep.
Like this and one.
This one's actually not on the list. I only download this one for specific ones that I want to listen to. From the fourth category. But like the category that Serial's in, it's now in with like the New England Journal of Medicine summary of like the week's thing with like COX-2 inhibitor, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's so boring. I can't believe it.
The fourth episode really did it. Like literally knock me out. I was like feeding the baby and I was listening to it. And then I just like sort of like woke up. I'm like, oh, thank God I didn't drop the baby.
I think I fell asleep on an airplane listening to that. I mean, I could. And the problem is, right, it's this thing where like, you don't want to listen to Serial too often now because it's so boring that you can't bear to. And so now she's made it every 2 weeks. But then the problem with that is then you have no idea. You can't even remember what happened the previous week.
They want you to forget.
They want you to forget. I will say though, you know, I'm going to keep listening to it, or at least, you know, falling asleep to it. And I will listen to season three. You got to give people like a three strikes or they're out kind of policy.
I think they'll have a good bounce back season three. But yeah, I'm curious just to know, where are they ultimately going with this? Like, I felt like they really started to lead you in the direction that it was going to talk about. Like in the first episode, there was a lot of like, oh, Bo Bergdahl says this, and he says he was like a secret agent, and he sounded like a really shady story. But I feel like we haven't touched back on that since the first episode.
Yeah, and honestly, one of the lines I heard, I feel so bad that you re-listened to all this. One of the lines that I heard in the most recent episode when I was kind of like drifting off was, it sounded like Sarah was like defending him. Like whenever she refers to his story, she refers to it as like, I remember her, she said something like, well, they, of course, didn't know the full story when she was talking about people that were angry at him.
Yeah.
And I was like, what do you mean the full story? Like, we're, you know, I don't think that the full, I don't think that like knowing that he thought that there was issues with his leadership as base is the full story. Like, that's insanity still. Like, I don't buy into that as like a legitimate reason to go off base. Anyway, I'm so frustrated with her. Like, it's actually like a personal issue now. It's becoming a personal issue I have with Sarah Koenig and not just the show.
She got a little indignant on the last episode about people who just don't care about people that get captured in, you know, all these different places in the Middle East, because she says, well, people say, well, what, you were stupid for going there. Or in the case of Bo, why did he desert the army to go out there? And she said that that shouldn't matter what the person was doing there in the first place. We shouldn't think that they were dumb.
Yeah, I heard that and I got angry at that because I was like, there's such a difference between being a journalist and going to Iran and being Bo Bergdahl and purposely walking off your base. Like, yeah. I just don't think you can put those in the same category. She's obviously like sleeping with him or something, right?
I don't know. I think that she's in the same way. It was like, she was like seduced by Adnan and like like starting to fall for what he was saying. I feel like that she's all in on Bo Bergdahl too.
Yeah. You know, and I recently listened to the New Yorker has a new New Yorker podcast. It's called like New Yorker Hour or something. And they actually interviewed her a couple weeks ago. And one of the things that I came away from it that made me dislike her even more was she was so like clinical in the way that she talked about the two seasons. And she admitted that actually, I'm not surprised by this, but just hearing it made me dislike her even more. She admitted that the whole thing is completely scripted. Like even the fun lines that sound like she's kind of, you know, a wannabe detective talking, you know, off the cuff. Mm-hmm. They're not. They're completely scripted lines to make her sound cutesy and kind of younger than she is.
Yeah.
And so hearing that, like, it took away some of the magic for me, some of the stuff that I was attributing to, you know, to her. And so I don't know what there is left to attribute to her for, you know? She has this production team who makes great stuff and has made shitty stuff recently.
I hear you. I think they're going to have a big bounce back season three. I think that there may be the reason why they're spacing it out is that they're really taking their eye off the ball on season two and they're working on something good for season three. That's my prediction.
I think that's right. Do you think that making a murderer really also has been a problem for them? Right.
I think so.
Comparison.
Yeah. The timing of Making a Murderer has really been brutal for Serial, because we talked about Serial when it first came on, that it sort of just like dropped. We had no idea that it was happening. Here it was. And they put it on in the middle of December. And again, it's like, why did they put it on then if they knew that they were going to potentially have this issue? I mean, they only got like three episodes in. It's like, you know, we need to slow this down. We thought we were going to be able to handle it, and we weren't. Like, why didn't nobody was like clamoring like, damn it, where is Serial? Right. And they put it on and then they have to space it out. And at the same time, they got completely just undermined by Making a Murderer. Like, if Making a Murderer dropped, like, they should have waited like 6 months to put Serial on.
Yeah. Yeah. My only theory is that they knew how shitty this was going to be, you know, and they're just like, they just wanted to just sneak it in here.
Well, then why not burn it off? And why are they taking time to space it out?
I think there's something to do with the Hollywood producer, right? Mm-hmm. He's getting something out of this being on. Like, I don't know. Maybe she's going to, you know, co-produce the movie with him.
Yeah. Maybe it's like the whole thing was like, he felt like he was going to get like this huge movie deal. Once they said, like, oh, I'll be on Serial, and then I'll get like this, like, you know, $1 billion movie deal for the Bo Bergdahl story. It's going to be huge. And then it's like, hold on, nobody wants it now. Everybody, this is a boring story, Bo Bergdahl. And now he's like, hold on, you can't finish this. I got to sell the movie rights before this podcast is over.
Yeah. Does it make you want to make a podcast like this? Like, Serial season one made me just feel like, wow, there are just so many talented people out there in the world, kind of investigating great stories. And then to see that the same people make such crap, you know, gives me inspiration.
Again, I don't want to say that it's crap, because it's very well produced. Like, I have to like tip my cap to what they're doing. It's on a technical level, it's just as good as season one. It's just a story that is, I don't know where it's going. There's just too many moving parts here, and it's not focused on any one thing.
I feel so bad, Rob. I mean, I seriously have been sleeping through these episodes. But I mean, I agree. It can't be.
Okay, talk to me about Making a Murderer, because you loved Making a Murderer,
God,
right?
I will talk to you up the wazoo about Making a Murderer. First of all, I want to say that I was like one of the first people to watch Making a Murderer. I started watching it like before Christmas. Like, I finished it by Christmas. I feel like a lot of people kind of got onto it in between that Christmas and New Year's break.
Yeah, just like you said with Serial. But you had said, when I said, why do they put Serial on? They said, oh, well, a lot of people go home over the holidays and they talk about, they're bored. They have nothing to talk about. It's like, oh, are you watching this? Are you watching this? Like, that's exactly what happened with Making a Murderer and not with Serial season two.
Exactly. Do you think Serena kind of cried? I like to think she cried. I'm sorry. I got to stop focusing on her.
I don't think she cried.
I have to be like more inwardly
focused. They are making so much money with Serial season two. And it's just because it's not as popular as the biggest phenomenon in history of podcasting. I think it's still, it's still the biggest podcast, I believe, at this point in time. It's just not a phenomenon like the first one was.
Yeah. But you know, Rob, I'm not like a licking your shoulders or whatever. What's the phrase?
Licking sucking your kneecaps. But we can go with licking your shoulders from now on.
But like, I mean, honestly, like, I, you know, I've listened to your podcast. I listened to the recap with Steven. Like, I'd rather listen to that than any kind of Serial episode with Bo Bergdahl.
Well, I do have more fun doing what I do as opposed to, you know, just like putting something out every day as opposed to, you know, spending hours and hours and hours of making just one, you know, 45-minute show. I'd rather just, you know, record more and talk more and edit and produce less. But that's probably the lazy person's way of doing things.
Well, I think it's the more successful.
It's a different thing. It's a different thing.
Yeah. At least you don't script every word. Anyway, Making a Murderer. Making a Murderer is incredible. I saw every episode in like 2 days. I'm very active on the Reddit. I don't like post, but I read a lot.
We're going to spoil Making a Murderer. So in case you have not heard it yet, you can check out now. But I feel like that most people either have watched it by now or aren't going to watch it and don't care. So feel free to talk about anything. So where are you in the Avery is 100% innocent and was framed, or that he probably did it? Where are you in this?
Let me tell you, because I've moved around a little bit. I would say that after I saw the show, I felt like, you know, unlike Serial, where I was Anon is probably guilty, and I would say if I had to bet on it and my life was on the line, I would say he, you know, 70% chance he's guilty. I walked away from Serial or from Making a Murderer feeling like he was probably innocent. Mm-hmm. Like, in both cases, right, you feel like they got a raw deal legally and probably shouldn't be in jail. But then there's the other question of, like, if you really had to bet, if you had to guess, if you had to bet your own money, what would you say? I would say Stephen Avery's guilty or innocent and Anand is guilty. And I think that, you know, that was based off of, like, I just think I wasn't compelled by any of the evidence in the show. I mean, this is all obvious stuff, right? Like, I didn't think there was any good evidence. And the evidence they had, I just felt like it was all tainted. Like, I truly believed, you know, that the key was tainted and the bones were tainted, and the blood was potentially tainted. And then, I mean, that for me is all about, like, the legal aspect. Like, is there enough evidence to put him away? But when it comes to, like, do you believe somebody is guilty or innocent? I almost feel like it's more of, like, a gut feeling, right? Like, you listen to Anand on the phone and you think, I don't know, he sounds kind of sketchy and he can't, you know, present an alternative theory. Whereas Stephen Avery, I mean, I just think it is just, like, you can see it in his eyes. Like, I just can't imagine if a guilty person, you know, acted that way, he would have to be a sociopath. And, you know, I think Stephen Avery has an IQ that's a little too low for a sociopath.
We're not lucky enough to get a sociopath.
Yeah, we're not lucky enough, right? It's like what the Innocent Project people say. Was that in Making a Murderer, where they're like, you know, sociopaths only, you know, come around every 50 years or
well,
whatever.
They talked about that in Serial season one also.
Oh, maybe that was Serial. I just, didn't you, Rob, just have a gut feeling about this guy?
When I watched I said, I can't believe this. I can't believe this. Stephen Avery is the greatest injustice in the history of America. Stephen Avery is innocent and should be freed immediately. But after the show has been over, I've sort of come around to, I think he probably did it.
Wow. Can you tell me why? Because I assume that I've read all of the things that you've read post-show. And I will say that I was almost swayed to feel that way at times. And then I felt like I really, like, I had to check in with myself and, you know, kind of reconsider it. And I always ended up on the innocent side, even though I was almost swayed by a lot of the stuff that's come out after. So can you tell me why you've been swayed?
Sure thing. And really, a lot of this I have to attribute to Akiva, who is my co-host on the Seinfeld podcast. We actually did a podcast about this on Post Show Recaps, where I spoke with Akiva, who has really done a lot of research on this, and another person who's a lawyer, Alexander Chester, and he was more on the pro-Avery camp. But I think that the actual Making a Murderer was a bit one-sided and pro-Stephen Avery. And while there's a lot of things that are to his defense that are brought up on the show, I think that the relationship between him and Teresa Halbach wasn't really discussed on the show. And I think that, like, he was making, like, a lot of, like, harassing phone calls, and he's, like, answering the door for her in a towel, and she's, like, really creeped out and sketched out, and she doesn't want to go over there and see him anymore. And I think there's, like, other things about him in his past, and there's just, like, no other credible story. Like, I don't believe the case that the prosecution made against him. I think that he probably is the person who did it. It probably happened nothing in, like, the way that it was described.
Brendan Dassey, yeah.
Right. Like, in no way is it anything resembling the case that the prosecution had, but it was like the cops, like, felt like it was him. They wanted to throw the book at him. They knew he was a bad guy, or they felt like he was a bad guy. And then they just started, like trying to frame him, like, oh, look, I found the key. So I felt like they sort of, like, planted evidence on him, even though they didn't have the, like, ways nailed down that he actually did it.
Interesting. I totally disagree with you.
That's fine. I know people feel very strongly about all of this.
I mean, so I think I've read probably everything you read after the show that could make one feel that the show was not balanced. And the things that I read, I'll try to list them off quickly. You know, I read that he had, in fact, bought handcuffs the week prior, that he said, you know, he was planning, and they were in some kind of burn barrel, and he said he'd bought them to, like, play around with his girlfriend, Jody. I'd read that a prisoner had said that he had talked in jail about creating some kind of, like, dungeon to keep women. I read about how there was DNA found underneath the hatch of the car. Mm-hmm. I read about these phone calls to Teresa Halbach. I read about the towel. You know, I read all this stuff. And I was like, every time I read, when I read also a lot about his family history, like, there was an article talking all about how, like, everyone in his family has been at some point, like, arrested for, you know, molestation of someone in their own family, and, you know, all this terrible stuff. And I think the reason, you know, when I first read it, I was like, oh my God, I can't believe. I read one article that made me feel like, I can't believe I was duped by this documentary. You know, that I could watch a biased documentary and believe that some absurd story about somebody being framed. And the reason I've come back around to him being innocent is I feel like if I had read even the facts of the story that were in the documentary, if I had read them in an article and not seen the documentary, I probably would have thought he's guilty. And I feel like what the documentary did for me personally is it like opened up my eyes to realizing that, like, you know, no stories are like truly black and white. You know, so many cases like this, you know, you have to understand the context and you have to understand like who the people are and like where they're from and how they talk. And like, you could imagine like reading a transcript of, you know, Stephen Avery talking or Brendan Dassey talking and thinking they were guilty. But like only when you truly realize like how low their IQ is and how like stupid his own mother is and how like unaware they are of the legal system. I truly feel like I got a huge comprehensive view of like what the case was about. And so I felt like later when I was reading those things, I was like, oh my God, like of course he's guilty. Like, look at this. He's talking to prisoners in jail, but whatever. But then I thought like, what would have happened had they presented this in the documentary? And honestly, like, just because, you know, there's probably like there are easily other explanations for all of those things, right? Like, who is the random prisoner who's saying he's talking about people in a dungeon? Like, is this prisoner looking to get out on parole? Does this prisoner have a vendetta against him? Also, for instance, like the Teresa Halbach, him calling Teresa Halbach so many times, like that evidence, if you actually read it, she once joked to a friend when they were talking about weird things people do, that he once answered the door in a towel and then said, ha ha. It wasn't like she was truly concerned about this thing. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like, yes, when I read, and then, you know, when I read all of these like things that were not included in the movie as like line items, they seem super concerning. But then when I think of like how they could fit into the whole story, I kind of don't buy into them as much. And I know that Jody, his girlfriend, recently came out and said that he was like a weirdo and blah, blah, blah. Like, listen, like, you know, relationships are crazy. Like, Jody's crazy. You know, if she's going to date this guy who's like, Stephen Avery's obviously crazy. I don't know if you've read the notes from him from jail where he tells, you know, all of his girlfriends,
right,
you know, he's going to kill them or whatever. But like, she's crazy herself.
Sophie, does it surprise you how well Stephen Avery does with women? That was my biggest takeaway from the whole thing, that when they introduced his latest girlfriend, I said, how is he meeting so many women?
Yeah, man, you haven't changed since when you were on Survivor for the first time.
I don't get it. Is it like he's the bad boy? I don't understand it. It just seems like that no, if this woman dumps him tomorrow, he'll have a new girlfriend by the weekend.
Yeah. What do you think it is?
I don't know.
He's probably, I mean, well, then also you wonder if he's like so good at women, does he really need to be like raping and murdering them?
I don't know. I can't get inside his head.
Yeah. I mean, I truly believe this guy is innocent.
Wow.
Have you not read the alternative? And there are good alternatives.
I really have not done my due diligence. I just feel like I don't have another theory that makes any sort of sense. I really feel like I think he probably did it. I think he should be probably not guilty in a court of law, mm-hmm, because they do not have the evidence against him. And I think then just like the fix was in where they just said, okay, let's just, you know, we need to like close this case and we need to send this guy to jail. So they took a lot of shortcuts in terms of the investigation. But do you have another credible theory in terms of what could have happened?
I have a few, but I have one question for you, because I hear you that like, maybe he did do it and it just didn't happen the way the prosecution said. And they planted the key because they thought he did it, blah, blah, blah. But how do you feel about the bones? So for people listening who don't know, there were bones that were found in his burn pit. Mm-hmm. And there are bones that were also found in like a quarry miles away, like some pelvic bones. And there were bone remnants found in a burn barrel. So like if he truly did kill her, like why is he killing her and like moving bones around?
I don't know. Maybe did they find the bones somewhere else and they needed to plant them there to make sure that he was the person who did it? I don't know. It's
right. So your theory is that truly everything that doesn't add up is them. They did plant it all, but he still did it.
Yeah, I think so. But again, I have not researched. I don't want to make it seem like I am an expert or I believe like strongly, you know, that this is, I'm adamant about how this is just my theory from watching the show and doing a little bit of research after all this. That's just what I believe. But I could be, in the same way I was swayed from he was 100% innocent when I finished watching the show, I'm sure I could be swayed another way by a convincing argument. So I don't want to, all the Avery truthers out there, don't come after me.
I'm also very encouraged by how much his lawyers believe in him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Like, if you truly
love
believe someone is... You know, I love them, honestly. They're really sexy in their own little ways.
Yeah.
But if you truly believe your client, like, might be guilty, you don't, like, ruminate on it for years and years like the way they did.
Yeah.
You know? Unless you have a great upset. I imagine if I was a lawyer, like, I'd be bummed if somebody went to jail who I thought, like, you know, probably shouldn't because, you know, there wasn't enough evidence. But, like, in my heart of hearts, if I thought they were guilty, I'd be like, okay, so, like, that wasn't the best legal procedure. But, like, I'm not going to, like, worry about this for the next 50 years because, you know, I think a guilty guy's in jail. But they must actually believe he's innocent. You know, they're obviously like very torn up about the whole thing.
Yeah. And it sounds like that Stephen Avery has a new lawyer who is, I saw some headlines that his new lawyer is blown open the case and that there's going to be some new movement. And I didn't read the hyperbolic headline for that. But what is going on with the case right now?
All I know is that he now has some hotshot lawyer who's looking for new evidence. I think what they're looking for is like new witness testimony. I'm not sure. And then I think that they're hoping for some kind of like scientific, you know, advancement that will help with this blood evidence. But I do know that like Reddit, even his old lawyers, Dean Strang and the other guy, Jeremy Buting or whatever, said that they were browsing Reddit and they were impressed by how many credible theories were out there. I mean, there are some theories that make me uncomfortable. Like some people have theories that it was the brother or the boyfriend. And there are still those questions about like, how did you know her voicemail password? And like, why were you... How did you guess that it was her sister's birthday? Like, that's very strange. And those make me a little uncomfortable just because I think it's, you know, it's, imagine if you're the brother and you didn't do it and you're getting accused. Like, that's terrible. But then there's some other stuff on Reddit that are fascinating. Like, there was a serial killer around those days that somebody thinks they've spotted in a photo from the courtroom who's since gone to jail. I mean, there's some interesting stuff on Reddit where if you look at the keys that she's holding on, like outside of the Jeep with new technology, they were able to zoom in on those keys much better than they would have been able to in, you know, 2006 or whatever this was. And it's very clear that the keys are different from the keys that were on the ground. You have a classic picture of her in front of the Jeep. She's holding keys. Well, that key set has two keys on it. The keys that were found on the ground, how many keys? One key. I mean, they're just small things like this that I think could make a real big difference if, you know, it got appealed. There's also a theory out there that there was like some weird guy, like somebody blogged about this in 2008, how her husband was acting really strange around that time and was like bringing home women's underwear and like burying it. It sounds like he had some kind of like schizophrenic, like mental break. Anyways, he's since bounced the country and lives in Thailand. I'm sorry, but if I was a murderer and I got away with it while I was, you know, psychopathic and then had a recovery, I think I would go to Thailand and never come back. Anyways, I think there's a lot of possibilities.
But the thing that was so great about Making a Murderer, I think, is exactly the same thing that you tapped into back in that first Serial podcast that we talked about, where you said during the first season of Serial that you felt like that this was a case that if you just studied the evidence long enough, the case of Adnan and Haman Lee, that you would be able to crack this case. And because there was all of the pieces were there, if you just looked at it for long enough, you'd be able to sort of figure it out. And I feel like that is exactly the thing that was so successful about Serial season one. And I think that that's exactly the same thing that Making a Murderer tapped into. It is exactly the reason why we have struggled to remain interested in Serial season two.
Exactly. And it's kind of the reason why Edgic for Survivor is kind of fun, right? It's the same kind of thing.
All the evidence is there.
Who has the winner quote?
Yeah, put the pieces together. Get Colin Stone on the phone. Put it all together. Boom.
Exactly. Boom. Oh, it's so fun. Loving Making a Murderer. I really hope more content comes, though, because I feel like such an idiot reading the same Reddit, you know, about the same old 10 episodes.
Yeah, more true crime stuff is on the way.
Yeah.
I'm sure of it. Sophie, tell me about this weekend. You went to the first ever Survivor Big Brother meetup.
Oh, my God. It was so exciting.
Was it? I heard it was a lot of fun from people.
Who told you it was a lot of fun?
A lot of the listeners of the podcast were there.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. I'm sure they were there. I feel like I recognized a ton of people, but didn't. I'm terrible with people's names in general. I'm not going to remember random internet people.
Now, Sophie, speaking of Reddit, though, I read on the Survivor Reddit that you look like you were bored.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I will tell you the story about this weekend and why I'm a little frustrated at the Survivor Reddit and why I'm never going to try ever again in my entire life.
At anything?
I go back. Well, I feel like if I don't do anything, people say I'm a bitch. And then if I try to be super nice, people say I'm a bitch. And so I'd rather just not try. Anyways, this is the deal. I've never been to one of these things before. I've never been to like any of these charity events, the one, you know, Florida people go to, all this stuff. I went, it just honestly makes me a little uncomfortable. Partially because I feel like it doesn't seem right that people want to talk to me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what I could possibly say. And it just makes me upset because I feel like I'm probably not saying what people want me to hear. It's just the whole thing for me is like very anxiety inducing. Mm-hmm. And I feel like these same people who are like begging to talk to me now are in 5 years going to like open their eyes and be like, why did Sophie act like she was so important person to talk to? Like, why, you know, like it kind of, I think that, you know, fulfilling these desires on by other people implies that you like, you know, think enough of yourself or that you, I don't know.
You feel like it's a trap.
Yeah, it's a trap. Like the minute you start being nice to people and start, you know, telling them all everything they want to hear, then it basically, by definition, makes you an egotist who likes the attention.
Mm.
I don't know. I struggle with it. Anyways, I went to this because I love Andrea, and secretly I was hoping that Vanessa would show up, but she mm-hmm. didn't. That's a whole other story.
Yeah.
And so I love Andrea, and so I was in New York, and so I said, yeah, sure, I'll go. I go, and there's, I don't know, 20 people there, and there's, you know, 10 Big Brothers, 10 Survivor or something. First of all, it was crazy meeting the Big Brothers. Like, I was totally starstruck. I mean, not as starstruck as I would have been if Vanessa had been there, but, like, the dentist, everybody was really cool.
I saw you posted pictures of Johnny Mac on your Facebook page.
And he followed me on Twitter.
Yeah.
And all of my friends from home were like, oh, my God, is that your boyfriend? I was like, I wish.
Yes.
But, yeah, that was cool. I mean, I tried to say hi to Jason, who, honestly, I wasn't, like, the biggest fan of Jason on Big Brother. He had no idea who I was. He gave me, like, a little pat in the back, and he was like, thanks, babe. And then he walked away.
Yeah.
And I wanted to be like, dude, I'm not a fan. But then I'm like, I am a fan. Like, who are you pretending you're not just a fan? Like, who gives a shit you're on Survivor? Like, he can treat you like shit if he wants to treat you like shit. Leave him alone. Anyways, I was having just, like, a lot of inner dialogue. The whole thing was really painful for me. Not painful. I mean, I enjoyed it. Like, okay. Sorry, I'm not describing this well. Either way, okay, listen, 500 people or something showed up to, like, get all of our signatures, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which, honestly, like, what do you do with the signature these days? Like, get a photograph, I think. Like, we should just ditch the whole signature thing.
Yeah.
Anyways, we have 2 hours for this room, and all 500 people need to see all 20 of us in 2 hours. I'm sitting in between. On my left is Mike, and then on my right is, like, Eliza and Brian, and then Kelly Wentworth. The whole thing was totally inefficient because, of course, everybody wants to see Kelly Wentworth and everyone wants to see Mike. And they're like, Eliza, Brian, and I are in between these three. And basically, we were just like, kind of like the elevator music for them, you know, like between Kelly and Mike, where they would like pretend to know us and kind of like shake our hands. But really, they were just kind of moving, you know, moving in between.
So you had to like move clockwise throughout the room. It was sort of set up like that.
No, they moved along us. So we were at a long table and they moved down the table.
Okay.
So Kelly was the first person at the table and then Mike was the, you know, the fifth person. And Liza, Brian, and I were in between, but it was very obvious that we were just like the liminal space. Like nobody actually wanted to like speak to us.
Yeah.
So it was like a little uncomfortable. It was also like incredibly inefficient because people would talk to Kelly for 5 minutes and they would talk to Mike for 5 minutes. The line was getting held up. I was getting super anxious because the one question I was asking everybody I could think to ask to make me seem interested in everybody was, where are you from? And everybody was like, oh, I'm from Boston. I'm from Mississippi. I'm from Virginia. And I was like, oh shit, these people are coming from a really long way away. There's no way we're going to get through this entire line. And then Meg Mally's dad was freaking out and he kept coming to us being like, Mike, you have to go faster. Kelly, you have to go faster. So I was stressing out because I was like, poor Meg Mally's dad, he's stressing out. Meg Mally, they sold all these tickets to these things. So I was like, guys, we have to become more efficient. Mm-hmm. So Steven started walking through the line, like basically instead of letting them come to him, you know, he started going. And so Steven and I kind of basically snaked our way away from the table along the entire line. And I thought I was doing a good thing by making sure that like, everyone got to meet me because isn't like that such a pleasure? And like signing all the things and taking all the photographs and like basically entertaining people so they're not getting bored as they're sitting in line. And I made sure to go to like every single person. And I thought they would also speed up the tables because they had less people to talk to. The other advantage of it, right, is like those people don't want to talk to me. Like, I'm sorry, maybe like 4 people went to that thing with like the primary reason of seeing me. Like maybe another 20 people were like semi-excited to see me. But like most people who were there like wouldn't give a shit or not if I was there or not. The problem when you're sitting down at a table, sorry I'm talking so much, but the problem when you're sitting down at a table is that these people like have to pretend like they want to see you.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas if I go through the line, like I just talk to the people who want to talk to me. Like I can control my pace.
Right. You're not getting the pity like, oh, hey Sophie, can you sign my book? And like, they don't even really want you to sign their book. You just want the people who actually do want to sign your book.
Exactly. And it's for the best, you know, it's for all of them. It's they, you know, it's to make the whole thing more efficient. I was passing out these photographs of all of us, like they're supposed to get signed all the way around of like everyone who was at the event. And so I was going around to the line. It was my way to meet everybody saying, would you like a sheet? And then I would sign them. And I swear to God, half the people were like, why is this helper signing this sheet? Like, why do I have this random ass signature, you know?
No, and I agree 100% with what you're saying, because, you know, I've gone to the reality rally at times and they do like the autograph signing there. And I'm happy to sign whatever. If somebody like knows who I am, they want me to sign something. But if the people, they don't even know who you are, they don't even care about your signature, but you know, they're just like trying to make you feel better. Like, oh, I don't want to insult you.
I need you to make me feel better. I feel
right. So it's weird.
It's really weird. Anyways, but I was super glad I came. Like I had some interactions that, you know, I don't do this stuff very often. And I was just like very touched by, you know, quite a few people who'd really put a lot of time and effort into like, you know, making things that they wanted to get signed. Some kid made like a book with all of our, you know, names in it with like a little letter to each of us. Somebody made trading cards. There were people that I could tell were like generally, it was genuinely like making their day, you know, to meet me. And like that was uncomfortable. Yes, like 100%. But like the fact that that was a reality, like I just had to accept. And I found that like I was very glad I went for that reason. Like if they were happy, you know, to meet me, then that's great. And granted, most of them were like 15 years old. Mm-hmm. But whatever. So I was glad I went for that reason. So between these two things, there was like a night event or whatever. I just like had to go to a bar and like have wine with friends and like try to decompress. And then I went to this night event, which was just like the same thing all over again. But luckily at the night event, people could like flock with it to the, who they wanted to. Right. So they all flocked to like Kelly Wentworth or whatever. Right. And I just kind of sit in the corner, but the night event was interesting. I met some of the beauty girls from the next season.
Yes. What do you say? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Honestly, I'd give a big thumbs up. You know who I was super impressed by actually, but I'm a little biased towards her is, who's the young girl?
What's Julia.
Her name? Yeah, Julia. So she's actually from like where I'm from. She lives like you could probably see her house from my house across the lake.
Wow.
And so I like really have a connection with her about like that area. And I was impressed by like just how mature she seemed. She really seemed like she had her head on her shoulders, as they say.
Now, I see a picture on Facebook also of you hugging Mike Holloway. You say you call him your bae.
Yeah, he was sweaty. He was really sweaty. Do you think this will help my winner's alliance with Mike if I call him my bae?
And say that he's sweaty?
And say he's sweaty.
Well, he had to do it. He was working hard that day.
He was working hard. Honestly, like, I am so impressed by people like Mike. Like, you could just tell that Mike is cut from such a different cloth than I am. Like, he was just loving it. Like, I guess it's just introversion versus extroversion. Like, I know that all the fans must have loved meeting him. Like, he makes everyone feel special, including myself. You know, he looks people in the eye when he talks to them. He gives everyone attention. Like, he truly was a superstar. And I can see, honestly, I feel like there's a lot of similarities between Mike and Kim, who I once met. Where there's just like something honestly magnetic about them that kind of draws you in. And Mike is a little more loud than Kim, but they have something in common.
And Johnny Mack, did he know you?
I think Johnny Mack knew me, which really made my day.
I think he did. He's a Survivor fan.
He's great. He was great. I mean, this is like such a boring conversation we're having. I don't know what else.
No, it's not boring. I'm fascinated.
I love Johnny Mack. I thought Aubrey was incredible. Absolutely stunning. And like super, super fun and like totally self-aware. Like I told her how much I loved her and she made some joke about like, what, you love train wrecks or something? Like she really, it's like a lot of people kind of rewrite their own history.
Audrey from Big Brother.
Yeah. Oh, I called her Aubrey. Yeah, sorry, Audrey. some people, I think, try to rewrite their own history after reality TV. And she was just like really owning the game, you know, what had really happened, which maybe is easier for Big Brother people because it's all aired. Like it's all online.
It's all
like
online.
You can't pretend, unlike Survivor people who go off and pretend like they were the best player ever. Like the evidence is there, right?
Now, who was the reality star in your mind, in your truth, that was the most inebriated of the night?
Oh, man. I tell you something. I didn't go to the after party.
Yeah.
I would have to guess it would be one of the Big Brothers because they are like kind of baseline a little more trashy than us. Right? So if I had to guess who eventually got there, I don't know. I'd maybe go with like one of the Big Brothers, or I'd go with one of the new survivors, right? Like one of those girls. Like they all seem slightly underage and they're at this new party and they're having fun. They don't understand like how to pace themselves yet. Steven seemed a little like, seemed a little red in the face. Honestly, what I do these days when I go out on those kind of things, I just take candy in my pocket. I had about 50 packets of Smarties, you know, those like little rolls. And then instead of getting a drink, you just pop them and you just get, it's like
a sugar high?
It's a sugar high, exactly.
Yes, Steven does, like, he does seem like very, you know, these times I've seen him at these things, he's just like, whoa!
Yeah, he gets, unlike I ever see
Steven. Like giddy.
He's a new person, exactly. Exactly. Well, I'm trying to think if I have anything else to say about this event.
Okay.
It was fascinating. It was fascinating, Rom. I love it. I love it. I feel like sometimes when these kind of things, I feel like I'm like diving into the pages of an In Touch Weekly from like 2001, you know? I love it.
You love it. All right.
I love it.
Speaking of Steven, of course, he will be your partner in the Wine and Cheese Family Feud team versus the Dirty 30. You saw Mike Holloway. You said he is bae. Was there any sort of tension between the Wine and Cheese and the Dirty 30? I know both Steven has taken some shots against the Dirty 30 on Twitter. Cochran, of course, longtime friend, Wine and Cheese adjacent, has taken shots at the Dirty 30 on Twitter. Was there any tension?
You know, it's hard to tell because the you know, it's almost like a cold war between the Wine and Cheese and the Dirty 30, because sometimes the two groups can be so kind of inward looking and so kind of into themselves that it's hard to remember that there is tension between the two groups, because they're, you know, each group by definition is oblivious of the other.
So are you guys ready for the Family Feud?
We're ready. I mean, the issue, right, is that if the Wine and Cheese wins, what's going to happen? Everyone's going to be like, well, the Wine and Cheese are a bunch of pretentious, overeducated people. Mm-hmm. And if Wine and Cheese lose, everybody's going to be like, ha ha, look at the Wine and Cheese lose. So I feel like it's a little bit of a no win situation.
Right.
And I feel like Max is already kind of like starting to say that, which is really a little unfair.
So who's playing honestly, for the Wine and Cheese?
It's not like we're playing Jeopardy here, right?
Right.
Like, this is like in the category of Wheel and Fortune kind of stuff. Like, this is like flipping a coin when you're playing Family Feud. I don't know how much, like, you know, smarts is required for this thing.
So who's going to be on the Wine and Cheese team so people can be excited?
Oh, you want me to line them up?
Yeah. So we can get our autograph book out.
I feel like we need, do you have special effects in your studio? I feel like we need the clapping thing.
We'll have it
good
for
answer.
Friday.
Good yeah. answer. Yeah, I'm excited about that.
You want me to pump in fake good answer clapping?
Good answer. Good answer. Yeah, you definitely need to, because definitely there's an audience, I think, in Family Feud that definitely claps at every answer, depending if it's good or bad.
I feel like the family claps for their own good answer.
Oh, we'll be clapping too. I've watched a lot of Family Feud in my day, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I'm not sure if the audience claps for a good answer before it's revealed, because then the audience would feel stupid if it's a strike.
Maybe you're right. I'm sure they have very strict rules about the audience not giving anything away. Okay, so our team is obviously Eliza as our team captain.
Oh, you're going with the captain, Eliza.
We're giving her the captain position. I'm trying to decide if she's going to be a good captain or a bad captain. I think she'll be a pretty good captain. I can't really see Eliza going rogue. You know, I could totally see that.
I feel like on a steal, like you think that Eliza wouldn't think twice about just totally going with her own answer instead of like sort of like capitulating to the group?
Maybe, but I honestly could see Steven doing it more.
Oh, Stephen, I think Stephen would be much more about the consensus. I mean, Stephen would be like, what do you guys think? Do you guys think, well, okay, what do you, like, yeah. I think almost and too honestly, much to a fault. I think that those are the two exactly. extremes.
Honestly, sometimes, Rob, you need in the end somebody who can just pick an answer, yeah. right?
Well, that, I think Eliza is that person more something. Than Stephen.
Right? There's some kind of countdown for this thing. You only have like 5 seconds. So who knows? I mean, if we lose it, I'll probably blame it on Eliza. She's okay with that.
I kind of feel like you should be the captain.
No. I just like to never put myself in a position where I could be faulted for losing. Right?
Right. Okay.
That was actually one of my problems on Survivor, is that I found it very difficult to step up for things and challenges. Like, I often felt like I'd be better at some of the kind of, you know, when you're in a team and you have to do a single type of thing. Because I just didn't want to ever have to be in the position of, you know, failing for the team. So.
Okay, so it's you, Stephen, Eliza,
me,
who else?
Stephen, Eliza. And then I think the next two people are really going to be, if we win, it's going to, I'm calling it now, it's going to be because of them. Because I think these people are probably like the quickest thinkers out of the five of us. I just predict them being really good at Family Feud. That is Brian Corden,
okay.
who is an SAT instructor, right? Like, his job is to know the answer to multiple choice questions. And at its core, the Family Feud, it's just like a very long multiple choice question.
Yeah.
So Brian Corden. And then finally, I think another secret weapon, Courtney Yates.
Courtney. Wow. This is going to be very exciting.
I feel like every time I talk to Courtney, I'm impressed by like what a strange kind of, kind of base of knowledge she has that spans so many things. Like, she just became a yoga instructor. Like, since where did that come from?
I don't know.
So I feel like Courtney is really going to be the secret weapon. We've done some escape the rooms with Courtney, and she manages to get out of a lot of sticky situations.
Valuable asset.
Valuable asset is right.
Okay. And we will see exactly who the Dirty 30 has. I think that their lineup is still a little bit in flux right now.
It's really annoying. I wish they'd get their stuff together. Do you think it's because they all just love each other so much they're trying to decide? Like,
oh, I don't think that's the case. I think it's quite the opposite. I think that's more the issue.
Oh, the Dirty 30. You know what's going to be annoying? They're going to be like, you know, what is it called? Periscoping at the same time.
Oh, no.
They're going to be like drinking. I mean, we'll be drinking, but they'll probably be drinking like a little more obviously.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to suspect that, you know, even though they could barely, you know, scrounge together five of them, they're going to have a lot of like random LA survivors kind of in the background, kind of like lounging as if it's like, you know, a daytime TV set and people are just kind of there living the whole thing. Oh, God.
Okay. Well, we'll see that the surveys are all set up and ready to go. We'll find out live this Friday night.
Can you give me some inside knowledge?
No, I can't. I can't. I wouldn't.
Okay, but what are they about?
We will find out on Friday night.
No, but I know, but could you just tell me like what the general...
The one thing I will say is that while there is probably a Survivor flavor to the questions are not like name 100 people surveyed, name a Survivor who's good at the challenges or...
Oh, God.
You know, they're not those things.
Right.
Okay, so it's not Survivor trivia.
I forgot to tell you. I'm sure you heard. I wish I kept this as a secret. Did you hear who showed up to the... meet and greet?
I have no idea.
Denise from Survivor.
Yes. Oh, yes.
It was incredible. Rob.
Custodian Denise.
Oh, my God. It was like she was a unicorn. Like, we just all, Brian, Eliza, and I all looked up from the table at the same time. She was like two rows back. It wasn't like she was right in front of us. We were all like, oh, my God, is that who you think it is? It's the strangest thing. She stood in line for like an hour to get to the front. I was like, why didn't you just come up? Like, you could have sat down at the table. It was so surreal. I feel like if you polled 100 people at that audience and said, who was your favorite person to meet? Denise would be in the top three.
Yeah, 100 people surveyed, top five answers on the board. Who was your favorite person to meet at the Survivor meet and greet?
Kelly Wentworth, Denise.
Denise.
Boom.
And did she come in as a fan or she was scheduled to appear?
She came in as a fan. I signed her thing. She came in as a fan with her daughter. It was so weird. I signed her paper. And then eventually I think she came around and sat down at the table. And she was there at the later event too.
Yeah.
Yeah, but what a bonus, right?
For, yeah, I always heard she's
Andrea
a lot of fun.
And Meg. She was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
She was a lot of fun. I did wonder with, you know, her and Courtney in the same rung. I don't know much of the backstory there, but
I think it's fine. I suspect it's fine. So we'll see.
I imagine it's fine.
All right, Sophie. Well, I'm pumped up for Friday night. I can't wait. Yeah.
Do you have any gossip on the third Dirty 30 you can tell me so that I can trash talk?
What
is the most recent kind of public feud they've gotten into?
See, I don't think they have many public feuds. I think that it's a little more behind closed doors. So we'll see. We'll see what happens if whoever is going to be the captain of the team doesn't take an answer from somebody. And then that really is like the crack that maybe divides them. They could end up getting into some sort of a feud on the show.
Yeah.
So we'll see.
This reminds me of you know what it's like? It's like the Desperate Housewives. Did you ever hear that Desperate Housewives cast? Apparently, like, they all hated each other. But, you know, they go to these, like, press junkets and they pretend like, oh, we just love being on set together. We all get Cosmos after. Like, it's that kind of bullshit. Just say you don't like each other. You don't get along that well. It's like a fact of life. That's not,
man,
you know?
The brand is too strong. The brand is too strong. You got to keep it together. All right. So we'll see what happens this Friday night. Of course, you could follow Sophie on Twitter. What have you been tweeting about lately?
Man, I got this new job. And so I'm really going through like a huge kind of Twitter kind of transformation. I feel like I've kind of gone into a cocoon and I'm trying to figure out what is the best way to emerge. I deleted all my tweets because of this new job.
Oh, no. You know, like Tony did?
Oh, yeah. I mean, me and Tony, two of a kind. But, you know, I was like, I don't know who my company works for. And so now I'm like, can I still tweet at Delta and say that I hate you and that you're the worst company in the world?
Yeah.
Who knows? So I'm trying to figure out exactly what, you know, how my professional and personal lives can mix. I don't know what I've been tweeting around about. Just, you know, same old bullshit.
Right.
Honestly, somebody took, I think, the best photo of me that's ever been taken in my entire life. So I retweeted that today and I felt a little like, do I retweet this? Like, is that super like narcissistic? But like, if you'd had the best photo of taken ever of you in your entire lifetime, wouldn't you want it out there a little bit? And honestly, I've never looked so clean in my life. It looks like I just got out of the shower.
This picture of you with the two fans?
Right? You've even noticed it. You know what I'm talking about.
That's the best picture of you ever?
I don't know. I'm going to feel really bad.
I've seen better pictures of you.
No, I don't know. I look so clean. My issue, I never look clean.
I mean, what are we going for? That just the picture where you look the cleanest?
Yes. That has always been my goal. You don't notice that? There are like two types of girls in the world. There are like clean girls and dirty girls. And it doesn't necessarily correspond to like how attractive someone is. Some people just look so clean.
Wait, what are we going for here? We're just looking for like who could be in like an Ivory soap commercial at any given point?
Yes. Yes. Please. That's all
I
want.
See, I think the picture of you with Johnny Mac is better than the one you retweeted.
Oh my God. Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Oh my God. No, believe me. I texted this in a group chat to some of my friends. And they were all like, holy shit, you look so clean.
But is the criteria just how clean you look in a picture? That's what the only thing we're rating it on?
It's been one of my recent goals.
I'm so confused.
Oh, clean, cleanliness, brush, hairbrush.
Next to godliness, they say.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. And Sophie, you're going to be watching this new season of Survivor. We don't have to worry about that.
Obviously, yep.
Okay. All right. So very excited about all that. All right. So Sophie,
Aubrey is my child.
Yes. Sorry. You and Cochran's love child. Did that make Cochran uncomfortable that somebody said that in their bio?
No, I don't think so. I mean, Cochran, you know, I don't think so. I feel like Cochran and I don't know. Yeah. I think it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not the most articulate tonight. Sorry, I had a couple glasses of wine before.
No, this was perfect. This was perfect. Sophie, it's always great to catch up with you.
Yeah.
And again, if
I feel like it's nice for the fans, they can kind of see us at our less polished state.
Wait, I'm unpolished too?
Yeah, I mean, we're both kind of, right? It's not our best day, Rob.
No, this has been a great day. It's a great day.
Okay.
All right, Sophie, thank you so much. Looking forward to Friday night. I can't wait.
I can't wait for Friday.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye. All right, everybody. There you have it. Sophie Clark. The hype is real. It's happening. Survivor Family Feud is on its way. And I can't wait to get into that coming up in the next couple of days here on the podcast. All right. So let me tell you about one more thing going on. Of course, that Podcast One, as I mentioned with the app, is also the podcast home of Rob Has a Podcast. And so that they are conducting a survey to help get a better sense of the people that are listening to this show and the other shows on Podcast One. So if you have a couple of minutes, 3 minutes of your time to fill out a survey at podcastone.com, your responses will help make this show and Podcast One the very best it'll be. In addition, you can let Podcast One know how you feel about this show by taking the survey at podcastone.com. podcast1.com. That's podcast1.com. And of course, we always love to hear from you guys as well on Twitter and Facebook and in the comments here on robhasawebsite.com. All right. So we've got a lot more coming up. Of course, the Spencer interview. I think that you guys are going to enjoy that. That's going to be coming up later on this week. Plus, I have got a podcast talking about the sociology of Survivor with David Lay, who teaches sociology and criminology. He's going to talk about where we see different things from the subject of sociology showing up in Survivor and what we can take away from that. Plus, as we mentioned, the Survivor Family Feud game is coming up. The March to Survivor Korong is going on. And if you haven't heard our cast preview, you can check that out as well on robhasawebsite.com. Looking forward to hearing what you guys have to say in the comments, and we'll talk to you again soon. Take care, everybody. Bye.